We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Craig Hempke from TF Metals Report. How are you today, Craig?
Tom, I'm doing just fine. Nice to see you, my friend, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Craig. It's always great to speak with you. And, you know, we've got a lot to obviously look forward to and try and anticipate for this year. But, you know, in that context, you recently released your annual metals forecast. And you start by making the point that if you can get the macroeconomic conditions right, you've got a decent shot at forecasting the gold price too. Yeah. So that being said, has it become much harder to try and understand the macroeconomic landscape, considering how many issues we seem to be facing right now?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if it, maybe for some people it is. I'm not sure it is for me. And I don't say that like arrogantly, like I know everything. It's just, I feel comfortable in my understanding of what drives the futures trading. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, price is discovered primarily through the trading of derivative contracts now, whether you're in London or New York or whatever, right? I mean, the physical fundamentals, you know, the central bank demand, Indian demand, you know, all that kind of stuff, it has an impact. But on a day-to-day basis, it's the supply and the demand of those derivatives that, you know, you see flux. That's the price you see. It goes across the crawl on CNBC, right? Mm-hmm. All right. So then what drives the demand? Because you got to have buyers of anything to make the price go up. What drives the demand? Well, most of that is through compute. All those trades are done through computers now. And a lot of those computers are pre-programmed to either buy or sell gold futures, gold price exposure, you know, based on movement. Is the bond market moving up or down? Meaning, are nominal interest rates moving up or down? Where are real interest rates? What's the dollar doing on any given day? That's why I call it a macro cast, is, you know, we can talk about gold and we can talk about, you know, the, like I said, that market structure of futures contracts and, you know, all that stuff that, you know, I talk about a lot. But in terms of determining price, if you can get the macro stuff right, you know, which direction is the Fed actually going, that sort of thing, then you're probably, you know, 80% of the way to being reasonably accurate. So I mean, I'll give you one example. And this is relevant to this year. We came out of 2018. Okay. So this is only 3 years ago. So a lot of folks remember this. Mm-hmm. The Fed had been gradually raising interest rates. The yield on the 10-year note had gotten above 3%. Over a five-year period, the Fed had contracted, run off their balance sheet about $750 billion. And it just got to the point where the rubber band snapped. And in October, November, the stock market began to fall. And then in December, the S&P fell like 20% in 20 days, okay? Plunging all the way into Christmas. After being I think the Dow was down 600 points on Christmas Eve, 2018, something like that. There was a well-publicized, I mean, I'm making this stuff up. I mean, you can go to CNN and find the links. I put the CNN link in my macrocast meeting of the President's Working Group on Financial Markets on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. Markets are closed on Christmas Day. They open on trading on the next day, and the Dow goes up 1,000 points. That's referred to now as the Powell pivot. That Powell then decided that things were getting, you know, so dicey that this move toward tightening policy was going to blow everything up. Okay. And even though, regardless of that, as we entered 2019, you know, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, all these supposed genius Wall Street economists were talking about 4 or 5 rate hikes in 2019. Jan Hatzius of Goldman Sachs. 4 more rate hikes. You know, they thought the 10-year note was going to 5%. Mm-hmm. And in 19, I was like, oh, it's not. It's not. And in my annual forecast then, I called it 2010 plus 9 because I thought 19 would look a lot like 2010. And that's exactly right. The Fed started, you know, that Powell pivot. They stopped hiking. They started moving toward easing. And by June of 19, they actually started cutting rates. Okay, so here we are 3 years later. And it's the same thing, Tom. It's the same. Just last week, there's all these reports of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, 4 or 5 rate hikes in 2022. You know, I mean, no. I mean, they might get away with one, so they've got some leeway to cut them again the next time the economy crashes or something. But this idea that, you know, they're going to, what, I saw something over the weekend that the Fed was going to run off $100 billion a month starting in July. Come on, man. What world do you live in? So anyway, this year is a lot like those years. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking so long now, I can't even for the life of me remember what the hell your question was, Tom. But I think I kind of answered it. I don't know. Did I?
Absolutely, Craig. Okay. Yeah, it's we always seem to be talking about the Fed. You know, again, yeah. Today is we're going to see the new Fed minutes. We're talking on Wednesday, the 26th here. Everybody's, you know, waiting with bated breath. So does it all really come down to the Fed?
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to, I like to use that line. I'm old enough to remember. Okay. When I got out of college and began a career, this is now 30 some odd years ago. I passed my Series 7 test, became a stockbroker, and I was a stockbroker for 6 or 7 years. And so I remember what that used to be like, man. The only time you ever heard anything from the Fed would be that occasional time when Greenspan would go up on Capitol Hill and people would try to gauge what he was going to say by the thickness of his briefcase and whether he had shit hanging out the top and all that. And I was like, and that's the only time you ever heard from them. And now 30 years later, they're all publicity hounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all, you know, whether it's Bullard or Evans or Cash Carey or whomever, they're all if you put a microphone in front of their face, they're going to grab it and run with it. They love having, I mean, honestly, and who wouldn't, right? They're the masters of the universe. You know, 30 years later, after Bonfire of the Vanities, it's the Fed. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous. It's the only thing that matters. In fact, it's so predominant that now the market isn't even looking at what the Fed is going to do in the next couple of meetings. Now the focus is upon what will they be doing 10 meetings from now? Is the Fed making a policy error? You know, is eventually the yield curve going to invert? You know, and all of a sudden the Fed's tightening into a recession and all. So we're not going to even worry about the Fed now hiking. We're going to instead base what we're doing on what the Fed's going to be doing a year and a half from now. It's just madness. If fundamentals don't matter, right? The stock market, the S&P is driven by like 10 stocks. And it's just, again, I sound like the old guy, you know, yelling at everybody to get off his lawn. But it didn't used to be this way. And it shouldn't be this way. Fundamentals should matter, but they don't.
Well, and, you know, to your point about, you know, looking forward the next 10 Fed meetings, you've pointed out recently that the Fed has admitted that, you know, their effects on the market are 6 to 9 months out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, how can they actually try and get a hold on this inflation? And how long out are they going to be able to try and affect the market here?
Well, I think that's part of why you see them so frequently is they're trying, you know, in the 21st century to impact expectations mm-hmm. quicker, right? Because that's always been the line. That the Fed has limited what they can do. Their one tool prior to QE was just, you know, moving the Fed funds rate up and down. And to have that have any actual impact on inflation or deflation or recession, they've always used to say it took at least 6-9 months before you saw any tangible impact. Okay. The Fed's, as we record this, I was thinking last week there might be a chance to surprise everybody with a rate hike today. Mm-hmm. After what the stock market's been doing, there ain't gonna be no rate. I mean, I'll be dead wrong, but they're not gonna be a rate hike today. Mm-hmm. So if they get around actually putting 25 basis points on the Fed funds and raising it to a whopping range of 25 to 50 basis points, in March, 6-7 weeks from now, mm-hmm. that the actual impact of that on the money supply and too many dollars chasing too few goods. That's not going to be felt until like November or December. Well, between now and then, inflation expectations get that much more rooted and entrenched. Mm-hmm. And that is probably the one thing that has held back gold over the last 12 months. I mean, a number of things have. I mean, we have a big move and you got to digest it and flag out. Everybody gets used to higher prices and all that kind of stuff. But this notion that inflation was transitory and inflation expectations are transitory, therefore negative real rate interest rates are transitory. The longer inflation stays elevated, the more that stuff gets entrenched. And that's why, unless the Fed, you know, does something crazy, you know, and hikes 50 basis points for four meetings in a row or something like that, I would imagine over time this year, I mean, we may, and I wrote that in this forecast, gold may continue to do what it's been doing in this range between 1800 and, you know, 1880 or something through the first quarter, maybe. But eventually that this whole thing kind of starts to set in. And one good thing about being in price ranges this long time is everybody now sees where the breakout points are. Mm-hmm. You know, if you come down and then you bounce and then you're kind of trying to find your footing and you're like, well, okay, where's the 200 day? Does that matter? And all that kind of stuff. But when you've been going sideways for 15 months, when price finally goes above 1880, everybody that has an interest in gold is going to notice. Mm-hmm. You know, when it starts trading with a 19 handle again and moves above 1920, those highs from last June, everybody's going to go, uh-oh, okay, gold's starting to catch up.
Even the people that don't have an interest in gold are going to start noticing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the hedge funds that have been waiting, you know, and have been thinking, well, maybe we'll buy some Bitcoin futures instead or so, whatever. The longer you flag out like this, like silver, silver's the same way. Mm-hmm. And it's dabbled with breaking down below 22 intra-week, but it's never closed below 22 on a Friday since it got above 22 back in July of 2020. Mm-hmm. But it also hasn't closed above 28 on a weekly basis. So it's been going sideways. So again, what's going to happen? Well, silver finally gets above its 200-day moving average and people kind of sit up and take notice. And then as these things begin to accumulate as we go through this year, once it gets above 28, everyone's going to go, okay, and boy, when it trades with a three, that's when everybody goes, okay, silver's finally taken off again like it did 10 years ago, and things move fast. Mm-hmm. So that's one good thing about this painful period that we've been in now for a while.
So, you know, Craig, we've been talking a lot about the Fed. And in your article, you point out how China could actually affect the commodity markets as well. Mm-hmm. So how does their credit impulse cycle spur commodity prices higher here?
Well, thank you for asking about that. That's something that about this time last year, okay? People that pay me, you know, to be a part of my site, I always tell them I'm kind of your eyes and ears, okay? You go live your life. You go do your thing. I'll try to keep track of all this crap that happens on a daily basis and tell you about what, you know, what's important. Okay. So as I keep track of all these things, I noticed some articles on Zero Hedge about this time last year about something called the Chinese credit impulse. And I'd seen that term before. And I was like, well, what is this? At the risk of me butchering it, let's just keep it simple. It's basically, if the Chinese credit impulse is moving up, it means China is running a more loosening their monetary policy. If it's turning down, they're kind of tightening, they're raising rates, that sort of thing, okay? Think of China as the largest consumer of goods in the world, right? So if their credit is getting tighter, their demand for things is going to fall. And generally, as that credit impulse goes down, commodities fall. Now, that wasn't the case across the board last year. We had individual commodities that all had their turn, lumber and iron ore and, you know, and all these different things that shot higher. But in general, you know, commodities just were still kind of gradually moving higher and all that kind of jazz. All right. So about early December, last month, I saw an article on Zero Hedge that said, you know, this credit impulse has come down to the point where it usually bottoms. It looks like it might start turning higher. And I, oh, you know what? I remember that from this time last year. And I filed it away last year and I thought, yeah, okay, even if the Chinese credit impulse is going down, the fundamentals are so good for the metals. I'm sure they'll still have a good year. Okay, so I see this article in December about the impulse going back up. They have a chart that I included in my macrocast this year of the last four times that it's gone up from bouncing from basically the same level that it got to in December. And I looked and I thought, yeah, look at all these commodities. Then I looked at gold and silver. Mm-hmm. Three of those four times, gold rallied at least 20% while it was going up and silver like 60, 70%. While it was going up. And I thought, well, this might be important, right? So what happens then? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure people, all your listeners noticed last week, the huge ripping move we had, not only in silver, silver was up at what, $1.50 or something like that last week, but all the commodities across the board, crude oil soaring, copper, the industrial metals, even the grains and the softs, everything, my whole board was green. Mm-hmm. Even while there was a day last week, the dollar was up 50 cents and the commodities were soaring. Well, what happened? On Martin Luther King Day, when the markets were closed here in the U.S. last Monday, the 17th, China, at the beginning of their trading day, announced a small rate cut. Mm-hmm. Opposite of what the Fed's doing, China's cutting, easing monetary policy, pushing that credit impulse higher. And lo and behold, look what happens. Commodity's been rallying ever since. What's crude now this morning? 87? Copper's threatening to move back up to the same all-time highs that it had last time. I mean, all this stuff. So that's just another one of those macro factors that, you know, that we talk about. Say, well, okay, you know, if I'm going to be bullish about the metals, I need to be bullish. You know, the commodities need to be helping us out. And one of the things that would help the commodities is something like that Chinese credit impulse. Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of tie all this together, Craig, what are the three, let's say, the three macro factors that you point out in the article that are going to help gold this year?
Well, that one right there is significant, you know, because mm-hmm. if commodities as a whole are rallying, then generalist fund managers, asset allocators around the world are going to notice, especially if the stock market is, you know, going sideways. And again, rising tide lifts all boats, right? The other part is these expectations of what the Fed is going to do mm-hmm. and how that relates to inflation and then by extension, real interest rates. Because real interest in inflation adjusted interest rates where, okay, yeah, you're getting 2% on your 10-year treasury note, but the inflation rate is 6, so you're actually losing 4% of your purchasing power. Or the 10-year inflation expectation is 3, so you're expected to lose at least 1% every year. Well, that makes gold look pretty attractive. Okay, so negative real interest rates, historically about a 95% correlation to gold. So then, okay, so then we got to get that part right. So that's the other big factor. How mm-hmm. how sticky is inflation? Is it a monetary policy induced thing? Or is it just simply the supply chain stuff that the Fed tries to talk about? Mm-hmm. So that's a big factor. And then at the end of the day, you know, the other part of that seesaw of real interest rates is nominal interest rates. Can the yield on the 10-year note rise above 2%? Like I said, it got to 3% in 2018 and all hell broke loose and the equity markets crashed. Well, they can't afford that. Mm-hmm. And just on mentally, also cannot afford, in the true sense of the word, the debt service costs that come with higher interest rates. Mm-hmm. So I suspect as inflation sticks around, because some form of stagflation was always the most likely outcome from all this COVID stuff. So as inflation sticks around, too many dollars chasing too few goods, those expectations get entrenched, but long-term interest rates can't rise, that all of a sudden negative real rates get entrenched, and then there's your biggest macro factor right there. Then you got all the geopolitical stuff, you know, all the other things that might worsen, but those are the two biggies.
So then, you know, Craig, you're talking about there's a possibility of some weakness here in the first quarter. So what are some of the headwinds for gold that you foresee this year?
Well, the dollar index, okay, it has been moving up since June. Now, gold's been fine. So it's not like you can just simply say, well, the dollar goes up, gold goes down. That's mm-hmm. sophomoric. I mean, it's more complicated than that, obviously. But the dollar index remains in a really easily defined uptrend. It has pulled back from 97. It had fell below its 50-day moving average and all that stuff. But it's in the same uptrend channel that it's been in since June. And it began trending higher at the June FOMC when Powell announced they were going to start paying 5 basis points on excess reserves just to get people to not crowd out everybody else, you know, into the short term and drive short-term yields negative. So that kind of spurred the dollar on. That's about why we now have, what, $1.6 trillion in overnight repo, reverse repo. So anyway, the dollar's been trending higher since then. And even though it's gone down recently, it's still in a pretty identifiable uptrend. So that's a bit of a headwind, right? And we haven't had a clear breakout yet. It's nice to get back above 1835 and 40, but no one's going to get really excited, and start clicking off these levels until we get above those highs from back in November. Mm-hmm. So I just suspect, probably continue with this trade for a little while longer. It's nice to be at the upper end of the range, that's for sure. But eventually the pressures are going to be so great that we'll bust out. Whether those are the macro factors, like I mentioned, or whatever. But I suspect that moment is coming. But to begin with, we may just keep going sideways a little bit. Mm-hmm.
So by the end of the year, Craig, what could we see for the gold and the silver price?
Well, that's always a challenge. That's mm-hmm. the hard part, because so many things, you can get the macro right and still not get price right. Like last year, exactly. Mm-hmm. We entered 2021 and I was writing about inflation soaring and negative real interest rates and all these things, and that should get gold back to it, what it got to the summer earlier, and then you usually overshoot by 10%. Well, I got all that macro stuff. I never in a million years thought we'd get to 6 or 7% CPI. I mean, I thought we'd get to 3 or 4, mm-hmm. And negative 2% on the 10-year real interest rate. And instead we get to negative 5. And gold didn't do anything for, a number of different reasons. So you can still get all the macro stuff and not get price right. Mm-hmm. But these levels are so identifiable now that I think it'll be once, and I don't think gold can stay down forever, that as price then clicks off 1880 and 1920, you'll get some momentum. I don't know. I mean, it's the last thing I want to do after 12 years of doing this, Tom, is I've always tried not to be one of these guys that says, oh, gold's going to 5,000.
Absolutely.
Or the COMEX is going to fail in September. I mean, okay, yeah, gold will eventually go up that high probably, and the COMEX will eventually fail. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to, you'd be crazy to say, you'd give it a date certain, because who knows when all that stuff is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So the target I gave for a year-end target is like 2050. And really the only reason I settled upon that is that there's a chart in that macrocast that Ronnie Sterfala, who puts out that In Gold Retrust report. Mm-hmm. He puts out a chart that shows every single major currency, maybe 12 of them, the last 15 years, the price change of gold in that currency. And you can see some easily discernible patterns, and you can look at the average. And I thought, well, I think we're in a bull market. I think the trend is there. I think the fundamental forces are there. And if the average return in a bull market for dollar price gold is 12%, well, why don't we just settle on that? We finished the year, 18 something? Add 12%, you get about 2050. Now, mm-hmm. the same numbers from last year are still in play, though. Yeah, think about 2011. Gold got through. And shot all the way up to 1920, right? So in 2020, we got to 1920 and then went about 10% higher in kind of a euphoric, hey, new all-time highs, and you get this rush. And that's not unusual. That happens a lot. That even happens in individual stocks. Well, used to at least. You make a new all-time high, everybody gets excited, everybody piles in, you put on about 10%, and then that rush of momentum fades and it comes back down. Mm-hmm. So that's still possible. We could take out 2,100 and get that normal 10. That's how I got to 2,300 last year. So I thought, okay, put on another 10%, you get to 23. So that's, get there at some point. Whether it happens over the course of this year, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I always tell people, I get on my site, people freaking out. Oh, the price is going down. Okay, but is your the physical metal you have, has the value of it changed? Mm-hmm.
Something that I wanted to touch on with you, Craig. Okay. We focus on price so much, but let's talk about the actual value of the metals. Give us some perspective on how these two things are actually very different.
Right. Exactly. The price and the value. Okay. The price of a car to somebody might be high or low, whatever, but the value of that car to get you to work, that sort of thing. Okay. Maybe that's too basic of an example, but I own physical gold and I've been buying it since I started this site or before I even started the site, because I'm very confident in how the monetary system changes over time. Because if you study your history, and going all the way back to the Romans, They were shaving coins, right? Debasing the currency to create more. You can create more of anything. You devalue it, mm-hmm. okay? And with everything based on debt, eventually the debt, you know, my grandmother told me, you know, that always at least pay the interest on your credit card because it compounds exponentially and it'll get away from you. Well, that's where we are. I mean, we're now adding $3 trillion in debt a year. I remember when I was in college, it was Reagan was running $250 billion deficits and people were going bananas, and it's now 10 times that. Because again, you just have to keep creating debt at this ever exponentially increasing pace, because that's the way you create more cash. You need more cash to service all this debt that's already in the existing pile. And eventually you get to the point where it's just, you can't do it anymore. And this is how it's always been. William Middlekoop is a guy I've known for about a dozen years out of the Netherlands. And he wrote a book called The Big Reset. And in the back of the book, there's an appendix of like 400 different currencies, that paper currencies that through the last 2000 years have eventually been printed into infinity. Mm-hmm. And what happens? You get to the point where you lose total confidence in using it because it's devaluing so fast. And so nobody wants to use it anymore. And that's why it just keeps the inflation starts to go faster and faster. You devalue it more and more. Okay. Eventually confidence in it fails. Well, then how do you restore confidence? You start all over with something that's backed with gold or some combination of something, who knows what it's going to be. But it's always been hard assets like gold in the past. And so knowing that the math is going to probably work out like that, the way the history has gone in the past, I own physical gold. Physical gold is my lifeboat. It's my ship in a storm. It's to, you know, get me from one cross side of the Delaware River to the other, whatever metaphor you want to use. And so when I sit there, I know this certainty is coming every day. That becomes more certain. The $10 fluctuation in the price, I mean, really? You're going to get upset, you know, and blow a gasket over that, regardless of the reason for it. That just is what it is. The physical metal is, like I said, every day by day, week by week, month by month, just gets more valuable. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you and I talked last year with John Adams, kind of in this vein of actual value. So when we talked with John, we were talking about, you know, these non-allocated or pooled storage programs. Do you think that sentiment has shifted away from some of these digital representations of the metal programs?
Well, that's kicking the legs out from under the stool eventually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Tom, I always compare this to just your local bank, right? Which is a fractional reserve system, like so many of the, you know, the way the precious metals are now. You know, I mean, they tried to run precious metals one-to-one all the way up until 1971. Okay. And then Nixon closed the gold window. And there have been all these synthetic forms of just as good as gold, gold exposure, that have been developed ever since. And so what's the ratio of total synthetic metal and allocated accounts, futures contracts, forward contracts, leases versus the actual metal underlying? I don't know. I mean, people have different answers, but I know it's not one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And so just, it's a fractional reserve sort of thing. You know, as long as not enough people show up at one time with claims on their unallocated account or claims to gold in London or claims to their bank that issued a silver certificate or, you know, in Zurich or Geneva or whatever, as long as nobody shows up all at the same time on their metal, then the system, that system functions just like your bank. If you show up wanting $10,000 in cash, when they're gonna look at you sideways now and make you sign a bunch of forms, but they've got it in the vault. But if 1,000 people show up wanting $10,000 in cash, they don't have it in the vault. That's how bank runs start. And that's the weakest leg of the stool of this fractional reserve system. It continues, and the financialization of it, you know, of gold continues until enough people call them to the carpet, you know, and it's easy to have an unallocated account. It's easy to say you've got gold exposure as a hedge fund by buying futures contracts. It's easy for Stan Druckenmiller to say he's got gold when he owns GLD. And none of those people own actual gold. I mean, they own exposure to price, which, okay, good for you. But when the time comes, when it does come, that there's a rush for the real thing. I mean, there's only so many chairs, you know, to sit on when the music stops. There's another metaphor for you. And so that, again, that's why it's so important to have your own physical metal. And back to this unallocated thing, I'll just leave it at this, I should say. If you open an allocated account, You say, I'm going to actually store my physical metal with you. You pay what? Storage and insurance, right? Mm-hmm. And it's physical metal. What do they tell you about unallocated? Well, you know, it's cheaper. You don't have to pay storage and you don't have to pay insurance. Well, duh, then what does that tell you right there? I mean, that should answer that question for everybody. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the issuer of that account can't go get you some metal and satisfy
hopefully
the deal. Yeah. But again, if everybody shows up at the same time, if the curtain is pulled back and everybody goes, wait a second, this isn't allocated. That's when there's a problem. And I still think that's the weakest leg mm-hmm. of the stool. That could start a bank run. That could start a cascading problem for all the issuers of that, you know, that pretend gold. But again, whether that happens this year or not, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, Tom, guess what? That's going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll happen at some point.
Yeah.
But when it does, boy, that's going to be interesting to watch. Mm-hmm.
Craig, I'd like to go back to something that we were kind of talking about earlier, about when, you know, price and momentum and confidence and people really start kind of looking back at things. You know, when we see the price of gold move, typically we see the price of silver move, you know, 2x of what gold does. But, you know, as we're talking about leverage to the price of gold, you notice something really basically tying the price of silver to the price of the GDX. So why do you think those two things are so well correlated? And is it necessarily just, you know, basically confidence in the sector?
Maybe. This is something that I've been harping about on my site and in the occasional public article for a couple of years now. And I was just inspired to write an article this week regarding that, because I posted something on Twitter and everybody was like, wait, what? And I thought, wait, I thought people knew this. Look, you can go to any, the site I use is barchart.com. It's easy, it's free. Okay. And you can pull up a chart of gold or silver, you know, the futures contract. And then you can do what they call an interactive chart, and you can plot it with any one of a number of other things just to see how things correlate. And I don't know what it was first time a couple of years ago, I guess, where I plotted gold or silver with the GDXJ. And then it was like, wait a second, this is like a 99, I mean, tick for tick. And then I thought, well, you can do this with the GDX as well. No, wait, hold on. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the top holdings of the GDX and it's all producing gold miners. So why would it trade with the exact same chart day to day as silver? I don't know. We can speculate. I mean, it's clearly done by algorithm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there are human beings, you know, at VanEck or, you know, custodians of other funds or whatever that are buying and selling, you know, Kinross and Barrick with every single tick of COMEX silver. It's got to be done by, all right, well, who runs that trade? Now you can do it. I mean, this is pretty small markets, right? I mean, silver is a tiny little market from a notional standpoint, a dollar value standpoint. And then you've got all these mining shares and the GDX. I mean, remember, you've probably seen some of those like presentation from Grant Williams, you know, I mean, the GDX is like what, 5% of the total valuation of Amazon or something. I mean, it's just this little tiny thing. And so somebody or bees has written these programs for, I don't know, manipulative purposes, hedging purposes. I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I know is it's there and anyone can see it. Mm-hmm. And again, last week, what brought this up again last week, somebody on my site was complaining that in a comment back last Tuesday, the day right after that credit impulse on Monday, that when that thing changed, Tuesday, all the commodities are soaring and silver was up 90 cents or whatever it was, but yet the GDX was down. And somebody on my site, kind of being a smart aleck, said, well, so much for that. Look at that. The silver was up and the shares went down. Well, the stock market was down that day too. But I said, well, just give it a day. If silver keeps going up, GDX will probably rush to catch up. Sure as hell it did. Mm-hmm. Very next day, HUI was up 10%. Silver was up, whatever, 5, 6, whatever it was. I don't know, Tom, I can't explain it. Let me put it this way. I can't explain why or who, but it's just, maybe it's just a reflection of the world that we inhabit in 2022. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's done by computer. I mean, 90% of the market volume is high frequency trading. So maybe that's all it is, but it's definitely is that. And anybody that's investing in the mining shares, I mean, you can always pick off individual ones, you know, like those of us that were in Great Bear, you know, Brent Cook told me about Great Bear like 5 years ago. So I bought some and woo, wow, that worked out great. You can always have individual stories, but on balance, the sector as a whole, for whatever reason, tracks with silver more than gold. And you need to be aware of that, you know, for hedging your shares or whatever. It's just, I mean, I think that's a valuable piece of knowledge for people. Mm-hmm.
Like you say, it's regardless of the actual explanation of it, it's an interesting correlation to actually look at over those different time periods, right? Like you put a couple different examples there of different time periods that it does track over. So
it goes back 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I won't go there. I was going to come up with some nefarious reasons for that sort of thing. And that's just all speculation on my part. No sense going there. What people need to know is, you know, if you are you got a big position, some producing miners, and you think if gold goes up, that your shares will go up. Well, that's probably true because if gold goes up, as you said, silver will go up. Mm-hmm. But if gold stays where it is, and you think, okay, well, my mining shares are probably going to stay where they are, and silver falls 20%, then you might want to hedge, you know, buy some puts as a hedge on your Kirkland Lake or your, you know, whatever that you have, because that's probably how it's going to work out. Mm-hmm.
Well, Craig, I think having that perspective, you know, that longer term perspective, you know, not getting wound up about intraday movements or you know, even necessarily weekly movements, but that perspective of that longer term, you know, here's the way the macro landscape is set out, and that provides a very good backdrop for gold. I think that's really, really good perspective to be able to have in this time right now.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. And you know, some people, I don't want to make it, I don't think they mean it like I'm some kind of cheerleader or something. And I certainly don't want to be perceived as such. But you know, like in 2020, when gold finally took off and silver finally took off, I had all kinds of people that have been on my site forever, you know, that were like, thank you for keeping me in this game, because I'd have given up years ago. Mm-hmm. And now look at things are rolling. And now you can see that even on it, you know, after the last 15 months, I'm getting some of those same messages and emails. And it's not like I'm, you know, trying to hold people's hands or anything like that. I just know that, like I said, I know what the math is. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know enough about the structure of how price is discovered and all this phony baloney gold and all the synthetic gold and all the derivatives and all that kind of stuff. I know how monetary history has played out in the past. You know, I know we're on this exponential end of this, what I call the great Keynesian experiment. And so it's pretty easy for me to say, yeah, hang in there. Okay. Don't let it get you down, because the price is probably going to come back. Mm-hmm. And so maybe, you know, for some folks, that's the greatest value they get out of my site, is I keep them focused on that big stuff. So I got to get the big stuff right, like you said. And hopefully we got it right again this year. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up there, Craig. Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't know. I guess I'll just give a commercial. I mean, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. I sit here and watch this stuff every day. And what I tell, and I got people on my site that are watching every day. And today, as we record this on Wednesday, is going to be a crazy day, because we're going to get the Fed lines, as I call them, at 2:00. And then Powell's going to come out. The only question about what Powell's going to do, we've discovered, is whether he's going to have a dark purple tie on or a light purple tie. Remember, Yellen always wears purple wherever she goes. It all goes back to Hillary Clinton wearing purple after she lost the election, because they're apolitical, right? They blend the red and the blue. Mm. So Powell, and it's showing how he's apolitical, like Yellen, he's almost always in a purple tie. So anyway, watch for that today. We'll see. But we'll talk about that today. And I'll get on this afternoon, you know, for the people that don't watch, don't care to watch, I'll keep track of what happened. And I'll tell you what he said and what to expect now going forward and what it means. And if that's of value to you, if that's worth $15 a month, then join my side. It's a great community. People around the world, we don't argue about politics and all that other crap, because we're all in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And we're all just trying to help each other out. So I'll just close with that commercial. I think the site's pretty cool.
Excellent. And of course, we'll link to the articles that you and I spoke about today. Great. in the show notes too, Craig.
Great, I appreciate it.
Craig, thanks so much for your time and your perspective today.
Tom, it's always great to visit with you. I suspect we might have to do this a few times this year because it's going to be a wild year. So anyway, it's always fun getting caught up.
Absolutely. We'll make a point of it. Thanks, Craig.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.